What is good, everyone, and welcome back to the Nostalgia for Social podcast. My name is Taylor, aka Nostalgia. Joining me is As Told by Zoe. What's good, my guy?
What's up, brother?
Hey, man, not much. I'm really digging the water type shirt you got on today.
This was a gift. I saw it on TikTok, and Emily got it for me.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute.
So I decided to wear it today.
Yeah, I like the shirt. It's fire. Today, we have our third installment of the Gorillas Lore for Dummies episode. This is episode 111, which is crazy to think about, too. If you've been following us for a while, I appreciate you guys. Make sure to like and subscribe to the YouTube channel and give us a five-star rating on this podcast so it can get out to more people. I appreciate everybody that does that. With that being said, today, real quick, if you have not listened to either our Too Quiet for Comfort review podcast or the interview that we did with Luke over at Rhino Stew Productions, please go do that. We had a great time with both those episodes. Probably one of my more favorite episodes that we've done. Especially the interview. He was great. I know you popped out of the podcast super late.
Yeah, my computer just bugged out on me. So I mean, if Luke is gonna listen to this, I just wanted to say that I loved that conversation so much, even though, you know, having four people on a virtual podcast is tough because, you know, we tend to talk over each other sometimes. But just hearing his input on not just anime, but nerd culture in general was really fun. And I know you were like, it's been 40 minutes and we haven't talked about the show, but I genuinely think the first half of the episode makes the conversation feel so much more natural. We were just having a conversation instead of just coming up with just interview questions. You feel me?
Yeah. And I know listening to the episode back again, obviously for me and how I approach this podcast as the pseudo producer of it, I guess, is that I definitely want to make sure if we do have a guest or we do have certain topics we want to cover, we try to get to them. But listening to the episode, I'm like, well, okay, it kind of gives you an understanding of who he is and why and how, in which he constructed making Too Quiet for Comfort, if that makes sense. You don't really get any input on the show from him in the first 40 minutes, but you definitely get his mindscape and what he brought to that the production of that show. So in that regard, I definitely can see why it was
I just noticed I still have the sticker on this hat.
what hat is that?
I have no idea. My mom brought it one day and I was like, and it matches my blue outfit today.
But if you haven't listen to those episodes, please go do that. We had a great time making them, and I know Luke, if you are listening, we had a great time. We probably will bring him back if we do a movie review on the one he mentioned for us,
Metropolis.
Metropolis, yeah,
so interested in watching
because it's it's the same dude that did Astro Boy, the same guy that did Astro Boy, whatever, made that. And then honestly too, on top of Metropolis, I think we need to watch the Netflix show Pluto, because that's Naoki Urasawa's take on Astro Boy, the same universe, but his manga adapted to 9 1-hour episodes. One of my favorites of that year. I think we talked about it on the pod too. That show. It was one of my favorites of the year. So I think watching Metropolis and also kind of watching Pluto and giving a review on that, I think will make it for some good companion piece episodes. So we'll be on the lookout for those. Real quick, before we get into the gorilla stuff, Zoe, being the resident movie guy, give me your rundown on your Oscars picks, what you liked, what you didn't like, your favorites, your predictions, what'd you think?
I have to just open it up with, every year, me and my movie friends, we print out a ballot, and we make our predictions, and we score them. We do a 3-point system. You get 1 point if whoever you want to win wins. You get 2 points if you predict who wins. You get 3 points if who you want to win and who you think is going to win are the same answer. So for best performance by a male actor, I thought they were going to give it to Timothy Chalamet, but I wanted Michael B. Jordan to win. So I filled Timothy Chalamet in one color, Michael B. Jordan in another, and I got 1 point because Michael B. Jordan won.
Mm-hmm.
But for cinematography, I wanted, and I cannot believe I always forget her full name, but she's the cinematographer for Sinners, Autumn.
Yeah.
I wanted her to win, and I also thought she was going to win. So I filled her in a third color, and I got 3 points because I was correct.
Yeah.
And I won this year. I won. I got 51 points. I only missed three categories. It was documentary, animated short. Oh, no. And I binked live action short. Because I'd seen one of them, and I was like, honestly, the short was really good, and I binked it. I got 3 points for that. But I missed three categories, and I was so hype. Listen, One Battle After Another is a great movie, and I genuinely enjoyed it, and I knew it was going to win a lot. But I am surprised at how much Sinners won. Sinners was my favorite movie of the year, and I was just begging, because people online, discourse online is the worst. Oh, why is it? I don't think it should have been nominated for 16 Oscars. Motherfucker, it hasn't won anything yet. Just because it's nominated doesn't mean anything. It just means it's in the running. Who cares if it has 16 nominations? It won 4. That's awesome.
Yeah.
The cinematographer is the first woman and the first indigenous person to ever win for cinematography. That's awesome. And she deserves it. Alone for the shot of Michael B. Jordan passing himself a cigarette.
Fair.
So honestly, I was very happy this year. The online can be a miserable place.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think K-pop Demon Hunters was the best animated movie of the year, but I'm not miserable enough to be like, ugh, it won. No, man, it won. It was big. No, it's huge. It was huge. Of course it was going to win.
And it's a solid movie. It's not a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination. Like, it's a solid movie. We talked about all this podcast.
The first K-pop song to ever win an Oscar. That's fun. Even though I'm not a huge fan of K-pop, it's a first. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. And it's like, for me, you know, I know people were very, people wanted I Lied to You to win like best original song or something like that. And while yes, that'd be great, none of you have worked in an elementary school in your entire lives, because Golden, the amount of times I've heard that song in general at the school that I work at is insane. But like, it's just a more palatable song for a general audience. That's it's hard to play I Lied to You in a general, for a general audience, because of the, like, that song only works within the context of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Like,
if you listen
to like the switches, if you listen to the blues and then you get into like the DJ scratches and the West Coast Compton song. Synth. You see what the Compton synth, like, it doesn't make sense if you're just listening in audio. Yeah. Like, you have to see the visual of the scene that's happening for you to get that. You know what I'm saying? So
yes. And Golden was K-pop Demon Hunters was such a hit, it forced Netflix to put it in theaters, at least for a weekend. Like, it's fine. And I don't know if we've spoke about it on this, on the podcast, it's getting added to Criterion. And everyone, again, people who use Criterion as their taste. Litmus test. Yes, you're wrong. I love Criterion because they release really nice special editions, and I get to find out about movies that otherwise I probably would have never watched. It's not my taste in movies, because I also like Marvel and animation and shit like that. So for anyone that was upset with Criterion adding K-pop Demon Hunters, you need to chill the fuck out, because kids need an introduction to art. Yeah. It's better that K-pop Demon Hunters is getting a physical release in general than it just being on Netflix right next to Cocomelon. Because now there's going to be a kid who loved K-pop Demon Hunters, who's interested in movies, is going to look up Criterion Collection and be like, oh, what else does this have to offer? And it's going to open their world to not just good movies and cinema, but to world cinema, to black cinema, to Asian cinema, to old black and white movies. Like, take a chill pill. You love Criterion. You're gonna get it anyway.
Yeah.
Just relax.
Yeah, I think the people taking, like, using Criterion as like the, like, it's some sacred fucking, like, I don't know, like, sacred space where, like, a lot of movies mm-hmm. don't really get. It's like a gatekeeping type thing, but it's yes. not really. Bro, fucking, what is that, Denzel Washington's sons were in the Criterion Closet thing, and one of them put the fucking Jackie Chan box set? Like, what are we talking about?
Exactly. So you're gonna give Jackie Chan a pass because it's Chinese kung fu, but you're not gonna give a pass to Korean, like a Korean animation. Story just because it's yeah. animated on Netflix and it wasn't, you know, art, even though it is art, but like art in quotes, you feel me?
Yes. It's insane. I will say, for me, one battle after another winning Best Picture, wanted Sinners to win, but I understand why it won. I think what's crazy, was wild to me, and I think is the discourse surrounding one battle after another. And I could go into like that whole thing. We could be about this for an hour, but I really want to get into like the Gorillaz stuff right here. The only thing I'll say about it is, like, I think, and this is like the this is like the people that, you know, you look at, you know, the am I too woke type thing.
Oh yeah.
Because it's like people's takes on Perfidia are kind of annoying to me, one. And like people not fully understanding what the French 75 is supposed to represent. Cause it's like, it's supposed to be, so okay. On one hand, just blank regular statement, I think that like sometimes when it comes to black characters in media or just like how they're portrayed, it's like sometimes we always want like black characters to be like perfect and portrayed as like having done no wrong or like either working to be great or something like that. And we don't allow space for like very complex characters. You know what I'm saying? And like you can kind of get into the whole like race fetishy thing, but I think genuinely it's supposed to be a satire on how absurd like right wing racists can be when it comes to race. Like you yes. genuinely don't like you're very much like all about white power, but for some reason like the thought of you being attracted to somebody that's has the same complexion to me is somehow somewhat like taboo for you. It's supposed to be a satire in my interpretation. And then also the French 75 is supposed to be like this very absurdist like revolutionary group that when shit actually hits the fan, they actually don't know what to do with themselves.
Yep.
Like they like revolution on paper, but not in practice. Like they Correct. Like the whole idea of like causing disruption and doing all these things and having like a key, like having like this, all this like shit you see in movies, essentially. Mm-hmm. They have like a movie idea of what a revolutionary looks like secret codes and like different ways in which you disrupt and all this kind of stuff. And when shit actually hits the fan, like the bank robbery scene, they don't know what to actually do. And then you contrast that with Sensei and that whole like sanctuary city, mm-hmm. and how they actually respond to like ICE coming into communities and rounding people up, or police presence in those cities, and how they move and how they communicate with each other and how they kind of like help people that mm-hmm. are on the run, like with that random hospital worker that helps Bob get out of the hospital so he doesn't get arrested.
Incredible scene.
Insane scene. And it's like that, like you watch that scene, or I watched that scene again when it popped up on Twitter, and I was like, yeah, I can see how it won Best Picture because of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I just think that like people's interpretation, especially, and I hate to be like that person, but like some black people's interpretations of what they viewed on One Bath or Another, sometimes it's like, hey, you might be a little too woke for me, brother. I'm sorry. You know, I'm, but it's like, cause they're engaged. Cause like, I mean, you know, when it comes to certain black media and people, black people in certain medias, there's always always look at it through a microscope. And it's one of those mm-hmm. things where you kind of have to sometimes, because you want to make sure that you are portrayed correctly on screen. However, sometimes, and I'm just speaking generally, sometimes that doesn't allow for the space of like complex characters. And I know PTA did not do a good job of defending his stance on the use of perfidia when he got interviewed with that question. Yeah. That was a bad look. I understand that. Okay. I just think that, you know, sometimes, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where you have to just watch the media and interpret it. You know what I'm saying? And really, really get into the weeds of what's going on and see what's being said on screen. I know you wanted him to say something. I did too. Didn't happen. We move on. It is what it is. You know what I'm saying? It's just one of those things.
It's also, this movie brought out a lot of people who don't understand villains again.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yes, Colonel Lockjaw going up to Bob saying he loves black girls is weird. But Colonel Lockjaw is the bad guy. He's gonna be weird.
Yes. It's an absurdist take at right-wing racists. And so he's that tweet where it's like all caps.
I am the villain of the story. We are never going to interact again. Just letting you know that I'm weird and I'm going to be doing bad things throughout this whole movie.
I mean, sometimes you have to just, like, I hate how movies have to do that sometimes. And it's like, hey, man, you could have saw, like, from the minute, oh, I'm getting into it now. We got to get into Gorillaz. But last thing I'll say is when you meet Colonel Lockjaw and him and Perfidia have that first initial interaction, I knew immediately he's going to be the villain. Because it's like, first off, it's Sean Penn. Why would Sean Penn be in the movie for 10 minutes?
You see what
I'm saying? There's no reason why Sean Penn would be in a movie for 10 minutes. Second, like, the way in which he kept, like, popping back up following the French 75, I was like, he's going to be a recurring villain. There's mm-hmm. no way you could just, like, have this, I don't know. Yeah, it's, people are being super weird about their interpretation of movies or just, like, their media. I hate media literacy as a phrase. But that's really what it is.
I mean,
it's insane.
And who are we to say anyone's take is wrong or anything like that?
Yeah, true.
Just open just a little bit.
Yeah, just be a little more open.
Just try to be uncomfortable. Try mm-hmm. to understand where this person's coming from. And if you still don't like it, you still don't like it. What can we do?
Yeah, there's not much you're going to say on that. Okay, so... I don't remember what I said about if this was going to be the last part for the Gorillaz series or not. I have no idea.
A development as I was doing research and, like I said before, writing / copy and pasting. I got to a certain phase and went, oh boy, this is too much for one episode. So out of 8 phases... Today, we're going to be doing phase 4, 5, and 6. There's going to be one more episode. But I promise phase 7 is really dense. Really dense, but not the best phase. So I did not want to already get to the end of a pretty long episode and then get to an even longer section that's not really everyone's favorite. So yeah. I decided to chop it up just one more time. I promise there's only 8 phases and we're getting to phase 6 today.
Yeah.
So let me share my screen.
And granted, it's like one of those things where too, like the mountain, the lore of the mountain, the story of the mountain hasn't really been like, yeah,
it's like just starting.
It kind of just started. Also too, like, and we don't know, yeah, we don't know like what other stuff is going to be said or be done about future music videos or lore entries or all that kind of stuff. All we know is like that music video that they put out for the album, and that was really it. And so that's all we can go on right now. So just bear with us, I guess, for this, for the final actual episode.
Yes. It won't be too long though. So let me share my screen. And today I would like to thank not only Melodic Magazine, but the Gorillaz Fandom Wiki. They had a lot more in-depth story on phases 4 and 5, if I remember correctly. So yeah, thank you, Melodic Magazine and Gorillaz Fandom. Now, to recap. Recap of the last episode. Murdoch almost kills Noodle while killing Lil Jimmy Manson during the El Mañana music video. And Noodle goes missing. During that time, Murdoch kidnaps 2D, creates Cyborg Noodle, and finds Plastic Beach. Russell goes swimming and becomes a giant from all the pollution in the sea. The real Noodle is attacked by pirates and is found by Russell. The band meets up at Plastic Beach and fights the boogeyman and the pirates. 2D is swallowed by a whale and wakes up in Mexico. Noodle becomes a yokai hunter in Japan. Russell is captured by Korea and let go when he gets back to normal size. That's where we left off. Now, on to phase 4. We are still humans. As Murdoch was escaping Plastic Beach, he was arrested by the battleship Ringo. 2.5 years have passed since Murdoch's arrest, and the music industry struggled heavily and desperately needed great songwriters and musicians to sustain itself. As such, one day, Murdoch was met by an entertainment internal affairs representative offering him parole in exchange for him to record a new album, which he agreed with. Upon leaving prison, Murdoch heard about Damon Albarn and the Heavy Seas' upcoming Royal Albert Hall show and immediately moved to Studio 13, a recording studio in West London owned by Albarn, without telling anyone. At the show, Murdoch was met by a familiar face, Russell. After he left the band in 2010, Russell moved back to America and developed an interest in boxing. Albarn opened his concert with 2 lesser-known Gorillaz songs, Spitting Out the Demons and Slow Country, which made Russell and Murdoch nostalgic for their time in Gorillaz. The two finally spoke at the show's after-party. Eventually, after a brief chat to relieve some tension, Murdoch asked, "Do you want to do another one?" To which Russell responded, "Yeah." The two were not interested in being friends again, but wanted to get back to doing their music. Already, you can kind of see.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, how I do, you know, like, Jamie Hewlett is part of the canon in this story, and now David Albarn has become part of the canon.
Yeah.
In the story. I think that's a pretty interesting, like, funny touch. Like, because they can easily, like, distance themselves from it, but I like how they kind of insert themselves, like, the Gorillaz, into, like, real life. Like, obviously, it's not, like, somewhat of a fictional world. Like, in a lot of their music videos, too, like, they're in, like, a club, or they're, like, with real people walking around. So I think it's interesting, like, kind of how, like, they do the aesthetic of Gorillaz at this point in time.
And then 2D, still living in England, heard that Gorillaz was getting back together and decided to go on a silent retreat in the Himalayas for the next 6 months as a way to prepare for seeing Murdoch again and being able to stand up for himself if he needed to. He planned on staying there for longer, but was excommunicated from his group of monks for talking way too much just in a few months. As Murdoch and Russell started working on new demos, Noodle arrived in a FedEx crate with 2D sometime around July 2015. Russell, Noodle, and 2D noticed how different Murdoch has become, seemingly remorseful for his past. Finally back together, they began working on humans.
Do they ever explain how Noodle and 2D arrive in the FedEx crate?
Well, specifically, I think I also noticed right there, Noodle, when she was done with her yokai adventuring in Japan, shipped herself in a FedEx crate.
Oh, okay.
2D came like a few days later.
Oh, okay.
2D was like coming back from the Himalayas and all that.
Okay.
But as you can see, they are like laying the groundwork for this whole like mental abuse thing that Murdoch is going on. Or that Murdoch has caused in Noodle and 2D.
For sure, yeah.
After a 7-year break, the band wanted to throw a big party to celebrate their return. They stumbled upon a dilapidated, abandoned house in Detroit called the Spirit House, which is the Saturn's Bar's music video. They were haunted by three specific demons, a giant one-eyed blue worm that haunted Noodle, a gray multi-limbed monster that haunted Russell, and a pizza slice with a face that haunted 2D. And that's where that story ends. You're going to see that, like, the music videos kind of don't connect like they used to.
And this is, and you know what? Us putting humans at the bottom of the album list just seems more justified by the moment. Because it's like,
yes,
nothing feels super connected with this album. I know they're all coming back. I thought it was really cool that they use a similar style to like Demon Days with the album presentation,
mm-hmm.
with the four of them in the boxes. Thought it was really cool. But it's just like, I don't know, the album's too long, and then some of the music videos don't really connect to other lore bits. So,
yeah,
you know.
They released a few other videos, and nothing really had any substance until that was mean. Like, again, most of the songs are good.
Yes.
I just meant like the stories didn't really have any substance to the overall lore until they released the strobe light music video, which at first doesn't really look like much. It's just them at a club dancing. Noodle and 2D are seen having fun dancing at the party while Russell sleeps, and Murdoch does seemingly shady business with a mysterious man at the bar. Murdoch was arrested and taken into HM prison Wormwood Scrubs in London for an undisclosed crime. Now, see how short that phase was,
mm-hmm.
and how it really didn't feel like much. Now, we're already onto phase five. Phase five is called No More Unicorns Anymore. As you can see, one of these pictures looks very different. and we'll get to that. It has to do with the lore. Hot off the heels of their big return album with Humans in 2017, the band decided to continue their momentum and release a follow-up album in 2018. While still on the Humans tour, the band recruited Ace D. Copular, famous for his work as the leader of the Gang Green Gang in the 90s kids show The Powerpuff Girls, which Noodle was a fan of as a kid, to temporarily replace Murdoch as their bassist while he was serving time in prison. Now, this opens up a world of, like, so the gorillas are canon to us, to the world. But technically, the gorillas are also canon to all cartoons ever because they're cartoons.
Yeah.
And that is backed up with them just recruiting Ace because they needed another green bassist, which I think is kind of fun, but I think confused people for a little bit.
Oh, for sure. Because like, well, and okay, in the, but in this section, it says like he was like an actor in the Powerpuff Girls as a member of the gang, Green Gang. So you can kind of, you can kind of make the reference that like the Powerpuff Girls was a television show with actors and all that kind of stuff. And so it makes sense why an actor would be on the, in the group, because technically like they're canon to our world in general, I guess. I don't know. That's just, I could see why people would be confused, but the wording in this section kind of makes, kind of does it, clears the waters up a little bit better in my head. So
also, I don't know if you've noticed, but like in each phase, the band has a certain style when it comes to their wardrobe, and you'll see how much it changes. But in this one, they wear a lot of black, which I find very interesting because the now is actually kind of colorful.
Yeah, it is.
The band now, with a slightly altered lineup, went on to record and release their sixth studio album, The Now, while still being on tour. In the Humility music video, an uncharacteristically happy 2D roller skates around the boardwalk, enjoying his new life without Murdoch constantly abusing him. At the end of the video, Russell causes 2D to trip over, whose eyes turn from white to black, after which he loses his ability to roller skate and immediately falls a second time. Now, what do you think about that little anecdote?
That I can't remember what, because I think we talked about this like back when the albums were like rolling out and the stuff was coming out, whatever. Because did we ever, because I know when we talked about the original episode, right, the, when we talked about the lore of the characters, he had two black eyes to start, did he not?
Yes.
And then they became white over time. Did we ever talk about that? Why they became white over time?
So this is kind of hinting at it, where they're saying an uncharacteristically happy 2D roller skates around the boardwalk. His eyes only turn from white to black after Russell kind of ruins the vibe by mistake. He trips over. His eyes turn black again. And then he can't roller skate. He loses his ability to roller skate and immediately falls a second time. So what does that like tell you?
My only thing, my interpretation, it has something to do with like his eyes have something to do with Murdoch in general. Like his own his mind state is affected by Murdoch, and that translates into how his eyes appear, whether they're black or white or whatever. So it has to be something Murdoch related.
Sure.
Yeah.
Also, like a quick side thing, that picture on the bottom where it has all five of them instead of just four, I'd never seen that before. And I kind of like that Ace and Murdoch are both in the picture. I think that's kind of fun.
Yes. That's cool.
I don't know what No More Gangs is. I've never seen that, but it's fun. You read the top right.
Yes.
It's not just, you'll see.
Okay.
While the band embarked, I guess for listeners, the title of this slide is El Mierda. And if you know Spanish, that translates to the shit. While the band embarked on their 2018 The Now tour, Murdoch began planning his escape from prison. Murdoch claimed that the man he met at the bar in the strobe light music video was a demon crime lord named El Mierda, who framed him for smuggling. Murdoch decided to escape the prison and track down El Mierda, but he couldn't bribe his way out since Noodle had frozen his bank account, believing him to be guilty of what he was arrested for. He decided that picking a fight with Big Balls McGinnis, one of the toughest prisoners in Wormwood Scrubs, would give him the respect he needed to get inside, info on El Mierda from other prisoners. After losing the fight to McGinnis, which is why he's beat up in that top picture, He set his sights on Vlad the Inhaler, an associate of El Mierda. Murdoch recruited a fan to catfish Vlad, getting close enough to him to find the whereabouts of El Mierda. Astonishingly, this worked, and Murdoch now had the coordinates to what he believed to be the crime lord's hideout in Patagonia. Now, this felt like what fans were looking for. Humans did not have a lot of this, but the now, it was kind of like an ARG where people were finding stuff out by doing stuff online. It wasn't like we were waiting for music videos. It was actually pretty fun. But as the story goes on, you'll see that I don't want to be negative, but for lack of a better phrase, it feels like they kind of missed the mark. Again, it's really fun, and I kind of see... I like it. I really do. It's just the way the story wraps up, you'll see, is a little disappointing. We'll go to the next one. Okay. Murdoch finally enlisted the help of Noodle, who had been ignoring his countless calls. She only agreed to help after realizing the demon El Mierda is a soul harvester and may have taken 2D's soul. Noting he hasn't been acting like himself for months. And her being a yokai demon hunter in Japan.
Right.
This was kind of up her alley. Convinced Murdoch knows about this, she refuses to do it for his sake, but instead 2D's sake. See, every once in a while, they'll throw in Russell doesn't want to be his friend, but he wants to make music. Noodle isn't doing this for Murdoch. She's doing this for 2D. Throw in that is the one consistent thing about the entire lore of Gorillaz, of Murdoch's actions in the first three phases have major consequences.
Yeah, it's a big ripple effect.
Which I like.
Yeah, for sure.
Noodle set a course for Patagonia to take on El Mierda herself. After getting lost, she was shown the way by some Andean mountain cats. Due to complications, though, Murdoch decided to escape prison once and for all, single-handedly, through the sewers. In a turn for the worst, he was assumed to have drowned in sewage while trying to escape. And again, this is now a part of the story. I remember when this was coming out where people were kind of like, what's going on here? What's the goal? What are we doing? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
SNL, Tucker Carlson. What are we doing? What's going on? That's the reason. That's the goal now. All right. Juan. 2 weeks later, Noodle arrived at the coordinates Murdoch had discovered, but instead of a secret hideout, the coordinates led to a health spa. She met El Mierda, who had given up his life of crime years prior, converting his evil lair into El Montaña Wellness Center. Notably, she discovered that El Mierda was not the man Murdoch met in the strobe light video, but was, an immortal old man who had never even heard of Murdoch. Noodle researched the details of Murdoch's incarceration to discover that he was not sent to prison for smuggling, but rather for simple parking fines. He was only meant to serve 9 months, and would have been released the same day he supposedly drowned during his escape. Noodle discovered that Murdoch had greatly fabricated the nature of his imprisonment, blaming his crime on the man from the strobe light video who turned out to be just an innocent leather salesman named Juan. Do you see where people kind of get a little annoyed?
Yeah, because it's like, what is the, again, what's the goal here? You know, like, because it's like, if it, I do remember this, was like, oh, it turns out it actually wasn't the crime lord or whatever. Because my thing is, with this story is, that's funny. Like, oh, it's just a random guy named Juan he did a deal with. That's funny. But like, what was Murdoch's intention with the deal? And then why did he make such a big deal about trying to get out, escape from prison? Like, if he was actually on the run for something, or he was trying to accomplish something that would help with like getting famous or pushing the gorillas higher, whatever, I don't know. Like, what was his end goal? It just felt like it was a whole lot of nothing. We just whole like story arc just for nothing to happen.
Yeah. Know? Where like compared to Demon Days and Plastic Beach, and even Celebrity Takedown with the first album. The first album wasn't a huge adventure, but like things made sense and people had motivations. Whereas like this just felt like Murdoch being annoying.
Yeah. I feel like if they're going to do that, it's just been like, they could have maybe, you know, if there was like a, how would I do it, or what I think could have happened to make the story better. Like, they could have like figured out something with like Murdoch trying to either like get 2D's soul back, because he maybe lost his voice, he can't sing anymore, maybe something like that, or like, and then Noodle has to help Murdoch with that to help 2D's get 2D's soul back. I guess that would have made more sense, you know what I'm saying? But it's just kind of like, we got to this big arc and they kind of barely touched on the fact that he's a like a demon lord, and like 2D's soul was gone. Like, they don't even really like resolve that too much. And then we just get to like, oh yeah, never mind. Like, Murdoch escaped prison for no reason. So it's like,
you're going to see this arc isn't technically done. So check this out. Moments later, we're still on the mountain in Pagonia, but moments later, a yak arrived at the El Montaña Wellness Center. Noodle went to investigate to find Murdoch tied to the top of the yak. It turned out that Murdoch was simply acting out for attention, making up an imprisonment story that he described as mostly bollocks. But as his story grew more and more outlandish, he felt a need to continue keeping up appearances, resulting in an unnecessary prison escape that nearly had him killed. His near-death experience gave him the epiphany that headlines weren't worth lying about and putting Noodle in unnecessary danger. The two simply spent a few days at the health spa while Murdoch apologized for his actions. After learning the true nature of El Mierda, he discovered that 2D's difference in character was simply him enjoying his newfound confidence without Murdoch around abusing him, or as Murdoch put it, just missing me. When Noodle and Murdoch returned to the band, Murdoch vowed to be a better man and joined them on the final leg of their now tour. So, the biggest disappointment, I think, is not even the imprisonment story. It was the fact that they were like, oh, 2D might be overtaken by a demon. And it's like, no, he just is happy now. It's like, oh, you could have just made him happy. Like, he could have just been happy. You could have just left it at that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think like it's like weird how I like the fact that Murdoch is a point of contention for every single other person in this group, right? Like, I think the only one with like a circumstantial, like, or significant issue with him that like drives the story is just Noodle. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, and again, I'm not like dismissing abuse, but like they don't really go too much detail on what that abuse is. I'll just say that for starters. But like that could have been something else where like Murdoch puts 2D in harm's way constantly or something of that nature. Same thing with Russell or whatever. It's just like one of those kind of deals, which like there's not that much like significant like contention with Russell and 2D as there is for Noodle. And so it's like you could have really made this one a more, if you're going to make a Noodle or a 2D focused album, you could have given him more on the whole Murdoch, him and Murdoch dynamic.
Correct.
You know
what I'm saying? So which they, and I don't even dislike the idea of him being happy because Murdoch's gone. I think that's interesting, but they had to throw in like, oh, we think he's taken over by a demon. Like, I don't know. They could have talked more about, because the album is kind of about 2D missing Murdoch, kind of. So they really could have entered this, like, why does he miss Murdoch if Murdoch abused him for so long? But they kind of don't.
Right. They, like, just, they can really expand on this, like the Stockholm syndrome kind of thing.
But they just,
you know what I'm saying,
make Murdoch very remorseful, which is fine. You know, the band's been together for 20 years. Like, yeah, you're gonna feel a little bit sorry for the shit that you used to do. But just trying it, because it just feels like they were trying to grasp at what the Gorillaz were with Demon Days and being like, oh, this demon, the boogeyman, and this and that, and blah, blah, blah. When in reality, it was just Murdoch being a goofball. Which, again, it could have been fine. This whole story of, like, he made up his imprisonment and Noodle had to go save him is not that bad.
No, it's actually a decently funny story considering, like, who Murdoch is as a character.
Correct. It's just a little annoying how they tried to tie it into 2D. At least for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, Murdoch becoming remorseful does play into what comes next. And what comes next is phase 6, Wish You Were Ear.
That picture of Russell choking Murdoch is so funny.
Yes. Well, so this is funny that you mentioned like Russell and Murdoch's relationship, because the only reason Murdoch hasn't put Russell through anything is because the first few years of them being a band, if you remember, Russell caught Murdoch having sex with
Paula Cracker.
Paula Cracker, 2D's girlfriend, and he beat the living daylights out of him.
Yeah.
So, again, it's very funny. It's a very interesting dynamic where you can tell Murdoch is just afraid. Like, it's that kind of classic bully mentality of, like, he's afraid of Russell, so he was not going to do anything to Russell.
Right.
Also, you'll notice how neon green Murdoch is. Nobody knows why. They just decided to paint him that way this whole phase.
He's just like super bright green.
Yeah. I think maybe because their whole thing is very colorful this phase until 2020, which is why Russell is wearing that Be the Change hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of shit happened that year. And going back to their aesthetic with their wardrobe, as you can see in the middle picture and the right picture, the entire phase, they're just wearing bullshit. They just put on whatever the fuck they had in their closet. Noodle kind of has more of a vision, but what? Russell's wearing a fez, jean, capris, green slippers, and like a West African tank? Like, I don't know.
Like, 2D looks in that middle picture. 2D just has like what you would wear, like just lounge around the house, like Adidas sweats, a tank, and then flip flops. Like, he's just kind of vibing.
Yeah, they just wear bullshit. And Murdoch is in a Speedo.
Yeah.
And in the right picture, Murdoch is wearing a cape. Like, what's going on here?
I think that's a motorcycle helmet next to him, too.
Yes. Again, they just wear bullshit this entire phase. Now, they're back.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize how bad it was. Oh, my God.
Okay.
That top picture is nasty.
You can kind of see Russell. Russell's wearing a blue button-up.
Oh, is it a kimono or a button-up?
It's a blue small kimono with a button-up under with jean shorts. I think slippers, like designer slippers, and bright green knee-high socks. The kimono's blue and the button-up is white. Like, where is the... And I think they tried to really mature Noodle. Because yeah. Noodle is wearing a tiger print leotard one piece, I guess.
Yeah, one piece. Yeah.
And they got her ass out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
And then, as you can see in the back, 2D's wearing jeans and pink socks with brown loafers. Like, honestly, they look better in the bottom picture. And in the bottom picture, Murdoch is just in a Speedo again.
Yeah, he's in a Speedo in, like, so this Song Machine and fucking, even in the Mountain promo art, like, he's where they're doing a little 5K run, like, yes, the color run. Like, he's in a Speedo for that one, too. That's just his vibe, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in the Rock the House music video.
Yep.
You were talking about it last time.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, so they're back. They're finally back. While visiting Iran to see Lake Urmia, Noodle made note of how climate change had taken a toll on the lake. She came to the realization regarding the fleeting state of nature on Earth and sent a postcard to Murdoch, 2D, and Russell while at Studio 13 with a message detailing her desire to build a machine and see the world before it's gone. 2D then sent a postcard to the band while visiting Beirut, informing Noodle that he had gotten the parts for the machine she had mentioned and asking what they were for. During this time, Murdoch sent a postcard from his yearly drunken holiday in Ibiza, and Russell sent one while working on his hot sauce business.
Russell. I love this man.
Russell just, like, is the only one in the band who, like, found inner peace. At this moment. Yeah,
for sure.
The only one that disrupts it is Murdoch.
Yeah, for sure.
In the music video for Desolé, 2D, Noodle, and Russell travel to Lake Como, which I think is spelled wrong. There's a U in that. Via a mysterious teleporting door in Kong Studios and record that song with Fautomata Diawara. Mm-hmm. Murdoch is left behind and unable to reopen the portal, leaving him lonely and depressed in Kong. When questioned about this, Murdoch claimed he wasn't even upset about being left behind and didn't care about their trip to Italy. Shortly before enviously asking 2D and Russell about portals, just in case he ever needs to find one for future reference. Can you hear my father?
I think I can, just slightly.
The craziest thing, he sounds upset. He's not. He just gets himself riled up.
Oh, my God. Do you need to stop? Need to pause for a second?
Just for 2 seconds.
Yeah, that's fine.
I forgot. You're okay. Tell Taylor to add a baseball fucking
He's laughing. Oh,
sorry.
No, it's fine. It was literally.
It's fine.
Oh, it's funny. I might not cut that out. Honestly, I might not cut that out. That's so funny.
Yeah, literally, he felt like bad.
You open the door. He goes, "I forgot."
He literally, I opened the door and he went, like, he felt bad.
That's really funny.
Man. Okay, back to it. Portals. Obviously, Russell is jealous. He doesn't want to admit it. Now. Oh, my God. Look. At least Russell is wearing, like, a boxing outfit.
What is his, obsession with Fez? How do you say? I don't know the plural.
Bro, in his arc, his Fortnite character has a fez.
Oh my fucking!
At least they have him in a boxing outfit. But also, why is he wearing a boxing outfit?
Dude, this—I don't know what they were on with this. This arc, fashion-wise.
During the pandemic, Murdoch locked himself in Kong's basement, explaining how he was working on something big that would change the effing world. That's like his accent. After a look through his online purchase history, this something big appears to have involved nearly 500 pound worth of pine wood and a blow up doll, which I specifically remember seeing on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
As the months passed, Murdoch continued providing social media updates regarding his secret project before finally unveiling it in the music video for Pac-Man. Do you remember this, the music video?
Somewhat. It's one of my favorite songs on the song machine.
I vaguely
remember it.
He's in like the wooden box.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what his big project was. This special project was his very own orgone accumulator, which was built solely by Murdoch in the basement of Kong Studios. I can get into what an orgone accumulator is because apparently it's based off of someone's real world scientific discoveries or something like that. But I had to cut this short somehow.
So I guess for those listening or watching, just go look up what an orgone accumulator was and then just kind of come back to this part.
Yeah. Throughout the video, Murdoch can be seen contently sitting and relaxing in his creation, which is that wooden box, which is an act of jealousy and defiance. He claims can also act as his own private teleportation portal, despite not showing any interest or the apparent ability to open a portal of any kind. Which is basically him lying. It's him being like, I have my own portal.
He's such a child.
Also, it's kind of not explained very well, but the song machine is the thing opening these portals. Because in every music video for this arc, it's them stepping through a portal and like recording with someone.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Which is very funny because the Pac-Man music video, I don't know why they decided to do... Well, no, I don't think they would have gotten too much shit for it. The Pac-Man music video was them during the pandemic, so they were only in their studio. They didn't go anywhere. I feel like they could have...
Like, I mean, well, if they're canon to the...
To the world.
The world, then it makes sense they wouldn't go anywhere because of COVID.
Sure. So, I specifically remember 2D gets obsessed with Pac-Man because the ghost from the Pink Phantom music video is like possessing it.
Yeah.
And like he gets possessed by it, kind of.
That's random.
I also just noticed at the top of the Pac-Man machine, it's them as ghosts.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's fun. Next. Okay, not a fez anymore, but a trilby.
A troll beard, yeah, that one.
Or a bowler hat.
The fits look moderately better than how they have been. I'll take these.
Yes.
These are fine.
And honestly, even though it's eccentric, I don't mind this 2D outfit.
No, it's somewhat. I mean, like, it's a lot of clashing colors, but it works somehow.
Yeah, it's like high fashion designer stuff, yeah, you know? Yeah.
Is 2D like dressed like a fucking old school journalist in the one in the top? Because like, I know the word cord is blocking him, but like.
Yes, he has like the old school fedora with like a little card in it. He's also holding a baby deer. Yeah, they were getting very eccentric this time around,
I guess.
Okay. And this was another thing that was a little annoying. A lot of the videos in this arc were staged. They weren't like happening in real life. You feel me?
Okay. I think I see what you mean.
Besides Désolé, Pac-Man, and I think the Ares music video. The Ares music video is the one where they're on the motorcycle.
Yes.
And Murdoch injects 2D with a truth serum to make him talk about like what happened during the now and why they left him behind when they went to Italy through the portal.
Yeah, and then Momentary Bliss with Slow Tie is just like a studio session, I
think. Yes. Yeah. So they released a bunch of staged videos with no real impact on lore until, besides Ares and the ones that I said, but until the video for The Lost Chord. The band found themselves back at Plastic Beach 10 years after the Black Cloud's second attack on the island. Past trauma is resurfaced as they explore the remains of the island, and Murdoch is seen overcome with guilt at the sight of the island. At the sight of the damaged and deactivated cyborg noodle. Soon after, a sea monster awakens from the depths of the ocean and begins destroying the island. The deactivated cyborg noodle is seen opening her eye as she lifelessly sinks to the bottom of the ocean. A portal back to Kong Studios suddenly opens as the ruins of the island sink into the ocean. 2D, Noodle, and Russell escape as the portal closes, leaving Murdoch stranded in the ocean. In the spirit of friendship and forgiveness, 2D quickly reopens the portal and reaches out, saving Murdoch's life. Some believe, this is very contentious, but some believe that this might be staged due to minor contradictions of the Plastic Beach storyline. Honestly, I would like to think that this is not a staged music video, but it just includes some retcons because they never really got to wrap up the Plastic Beach storyline the way they wanted to.
Yeah, and like, wasn't this around the time like they were announcing the deluxe version of Plastic Beach? Or am I wrong about that?
No, yeah, you are correct.
Okay.
You are correct. And did I put it in the next slide? No. You gotta be kidding me. A part four? Yes, this is where we'll end for the day. But you're not wrong because that's right. I didn't put it in the presentation because it kind of has nothing to do with anything. But a secret organization was gonna clone the gorillas because they are an evil organization that's trying to stifle originality, and the gorillas are on the top of their list because they're so original. But then that just led into them dropping the box set, and then nothing ever came to be with the secret organization. It was like,
nah.
But I guess for a little taste, this is my favorite logo that I've created so far. Next time, we'll get into phase 7, the static channel.
And the fish is decently better in this one.
Yes, they're still kind of wearing bullshit, but it's getting a little bit better. But we'll leave that that you see how we're at an hour. We're at an hour.
Yeah.
I feel like if I would have continued, we would have stopped closer to 2 hours. And I'm gonna, I gotta give these people a break.
Yeah. So yeah, that's I mean, that's part three. I know we kind of wanted to see if we could stretch a little bit, but you know, sometimes it kind of happens like that or whatever. So be on the lookout for the next part. Before we go, Zoe, do you have any music recommendations, or is there any album from the 1001 list that you want to touch on really quick?
Sure. Recently, actually yesterday, I got this album from the 1001 list. It's called, it's in Spanish or something near it, because I don't think I've ever heard it be said like this in Spanish, but it's called La Revancha del Tango by Gotan Project. Gotan Project, never heard of them, but they're like this jazz trio. And this was 2001. So I think they were trying to like revamp jazz. So it's like a lot of electronic beats with real instruments. It's chill. It's really chill. It's really fun for anyone that's interested in broadening their horizons.
I have three quick ones. Good Kid, really cool band. They have an album coming out called Can We Hang Out Sometime? Their EPs have always been great to me. So they have 4 songs out so far on it. Cicada is my favorite one. It's very, very good. It's like they have a very distinct sound about them that I really like. And so I think that this album is going to turn out to be pretty, pretty good. I've listened to a lot more like soul-ish music lately, soul and like dance music lately. And so For Mary by Olive Jones is an album that came out 2 weeks ago. Very good. She's like this very soulful sound, very like a lot of like jazz interpretations. Very good. If you like it's a very like toned down version of like Jungle. But if you like Jungle or you like Loaded Honey, you would like Olive Jones. She's very good. And then the album LK99 by Levin Cali. If you like Duckworth or Catronata, you would like this album. It's very, very good. So give those albums a listen. You got anything else, or are we good?
I actually, you just reminded me, because of MF Doom, because of an MF Doom sample, I started listening to Quincy Jones's album The Dude. That album's great. I don't know if anyone, I don't know if you've ever heard I Know Karita. That song is gas. Oh, surprise, Quincy Jones was good, you know?
Yeah, right, but, exactly. Fork found in kitchen, you feel me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that has been everything from all of us. I've been Taylor, aka Nostalgia. As to my Zoe, see you guys next time. Peace.